Welcome to For the Love of Conversation, the podcast that grew out of 3 Minute Storyteller, where we believe conversations connect us and social change begins with the stories we tell. At 3 Minute Storyteller, we share digital stories, video snippets of intimate, messy, expansive conversations with a wildly eclectic bunch of artists, scientists, leaders of all stripes, all who are legendary change agents. Some you may know, and hopefully many you don't. This podcast is the opportunity to bring you into the full conversation. I'm Shannon Mannon, along with my husband Mike and our VW bus Scarlett, who we've outfitted into an awesome mobile storytelling unit. We invite you into the full conversation with us. We're so glad you're along for the ride. I don't know about you, but I'm still reeling from what went down this weekend with the March for Our Lives protest and rallies in Washington, D.C., with sister demonstrations across the globe. The whole experience just brings me so much hope. Hope, yes, that we're finally building a movement that will bring the sensible gun reform that the majority of this country has been demanding. But it's also a deeper hope. It's a hope from watching how this new generation weaves together the narratives that have sought to divide us, and they bring it back together. So in this case, it's that gun violence is all interconnected, but on a large level, that all oppression and violence is interconnected. The Parkland students visited high schools in D.C., where the majority of the student body is African American, to use their media spotlight to illuminate the stories and struggles of students of color who face a different but just as insidious type of gun violence every day. These young people, as Emma Gonzalez demonstrated in her speech, know that silence is often more powerful than words. Or they know what Sam Fuentes' speech taught me, which is that you can actually vomit on stage and go on to deliver the most powerful and heartbreaking work of art imaginable. Because it's not about me or some false notion of perfection. It's about something much, much greater. The transformation it takes to move from loss to love. So it all makes me wonder, how can we support these young leaders and this movement right here in our own communities? I think this week's storytellers offer a really beautiful example of how we can do just that as adults right here in our own backyards. Ann Colby Cummins chairs Gun Sense Chester County, a Pennsylvania-based nonpartisan nonprofit that's focused on common sense gun reform. Peter Alois is her friend and fellow common sense gun reform advocate. Peter is also a Vietnam veteran, a retired diplomat, and a gun owner who is a leader at his local gun club. Ann and Peter have decided to use their natural gifts of listening and patience to address one of our most divisive issues, and you'll hear why in our conversation. I have to say that during our conversation, I was fascinated just watching the dynamics between these friends. They definitely aren't afraid to speak their truth and challenge each other's thinking, but it's all done with such like a gentle, playful tone and full of admiration. Like, we know that real change is slow and really hard. The work of grassroots volunteers like Ann and Peter, I know, energize our social fabric and they fertilize the soil for change. They've shown me that relationship by relationship, conversation by conversation, our connective tissue is strengthened, building our collective muscles to hold the complexity of both these issues and of each other. Here's our conversation.
So I grew up in a suburb of Boston, Lexington, Massachusetts, which is home of the American Revolution. The earliest battle of the war was fought in Lexington. We celebrate Patriots Day every year. We did not have guns in our home in Lexington, but my father grew up in a hunting family in Vermont, and when I went to see my grandparents, my grandfather had hunting rifles in a case. And we would see deer on top of pickup trucks that had been killed. My dad explained that hunters killed for the venison, and he had enjoyed it as a child.
For my side, my parents were from upstate New York, and they had some property up there. So I actually started shooting on my mom's 22 when I was maybe 9 or 10 years old. Again, it was my mom's 22. That said, still, my father was a military officer and was a veteran of World War II as well as the Korean War. So the notion of guns or, very frankly, weapons in my life was very, very normal and acceptable. I didn't think about it as being, as in any way possible, as being a toy or as some part of my identity, but rather simply a tool that in upstate New York you needed, like an axe or being able to drive stick shift cars. So for me, it has always been simply a skill that one ought to be adequate at, safe with, but at least some basic skill.
And let's talk about your work, like with guns in Chester County. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about what you do there, mm-hmm. and kind of what motivated you to get involved.
Sure. I am chairperson of Gun Sense Chester County. We're an all-volunteer, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, and we believe that common ground is the solution. So we focus on educating people about gun violence and gun regulation, and then engaging them in thoughtful dialogue. We bring together people who are gun owners and non-gun owners and get them involved in exchanging viewpoints so that they can make informed decisions about what they think is an appropriate balance for our society moving forward.
And, you know, can you talk a little bit about your coming as a volunteer, citizen, mm-hmm. Mother, mm-hmm. community member to this work, and what was your tipping point in terms of taking action?
I got involved because the summer, about 18 months ago, I had read yet another article in the Philadelphia Inquirer about young people in Philadelphia being shot dead, and it was my enough moment. Since that time, I have realized that both of my young adult sons have been in situations that very well could have led to their being on the front page of a newspaper. So we like to think that this is always about someone else, but in fact, it could be about any one of us.
Peter, let's go over to you. I'm struck by when we had our prior conversation, you really, I thought of you afterwards as an embedded journalist, because you are, you're a gun owner, you're at the gun club, but you have different perspective than some of the folks that are part of that organization. And, I feel like you really use your credibility as a veteran and as an elder leader at the gun club to help to change minds or open minds or have conversations with people that maybe otherwise they would not have. So I just thought, could you respond to what you think are some ingredients that you use when you might approach someone who you've said is like kind of mindlessly spouting the NRA party line or something?
Well, certainly when I was a diplomat, I met many individuals, many citizens of those different countries that I was assigned in, who really had very minimal understanding of the United States. Their views of America were based on the movies or the music, but if you will, culture. And frequently they had never been to the United States. So if such people somehow came across my path and I felt that they had a wrong, an inaccurate view of the United States, I would try to correct them, but not necessarily with any big formal speech, but rather, well, let me tell you about my family and what I worry about as a dad. And I have three children, and all of them were born overseas. So it was very easy for me to identify with, if you will, with a man or a woman, because typically we all have families. If not children, we all have moms and dads and uncles and nieces, or maybe we all have grandchildren as well too. So on the most human of levels, you can very easily connect with some person and talk about the United States. In the same way, what I have also noticed now that I am back in the United States, very frequently individuals, and let me use terms that I really don't like, but people on the far right who are enthusiastic and zealous gun owners, as well as people on the far left who are, may I say, rabidly anti-gun, they're both extreme, and they both tend to be, in my view, they both tend to be ignorant. Both sides tend to be ignorant, let alone of each other, but of the realities of, let me just use the term, gun use. People who shoot regularly, and men and women I know at my gun club, they're very, very responsible. And they come from probably a hunting background, possibly a somewhat more rural background, at least let's say 20, 30 years ago. But there's a great deal of ignorance from the wings, from the extremes of both sides. So I'm pretty much in the middle, but I am a gun owner, but I'm all about gun safety.
And can you talk a little bit about, when you first met, and you can make this, the full story, because I think it's important. Talk about why you first, I think, reached out to Peter mm-hmm. When you started with GunSense, and what about the beginnings of your relationship surprised you and opened your eyes?
I reached out to Peter because I had heard from several people in the gun violence prevention movement that Peter was a gun owner who was approachable and happy to have a conversation. I knew I had a lot to learn. So I reached out to him and asked if we could meet. And conveniently, his target shooting club is about a mile and a half from our house. We know what days target practice is going on, even though it's a couple miles away. And so we met for lunch. That was a very informative moment in my learning about how to do this work. There was a part of the conversation, and I don't think that Peter even realized at the time how impactful his comment was. But what he said to me was, "It really bothers me and feels disrespectful when people say, I would never touch a gun, shoot another person, mm-hmm. however they fill in that blank around the presence of guns." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because I am a veteran and the United States asked me to take up arms on behalf of our nation. And I have a hard time with someone saying categorically, I would never." That made good sense to me. And it was the first of many conversations that have helped to expand my viewpoint and understanding that everyone has their reasons. And often, they're very good reasons that I can readily understand as to why they have used or might like to use a gun.
Peter, I wanted to go back to a story you told me when we first spoke around, I think it might have been one of the first times you had been at the predecessor to the GunSense group that your friend had led, had started. And you said something about, someone said, how many people in here are gun owners? And you were one of the first ones to raise your hand. And others kind of wouldn't admit it until the meeting was over. Can you talk a little bit about, could you tell that story in your own words, first of all? And then second, like what would you attribute that to?
What, please?
That whole fear of people, what would you attribute that reticence of other people to not share their truth around their relationship with guns? Like what was the dynamic at play in that group setting?
I was happy to come to that group because the organizer at that point was very candid about acknowledging that his members really didn't know anything about guns. And as a gun owner and as someone who is reasonably knowledgeable about pistols and rifles and shotguns, honestly, it bothers me the lack of basic information that people who are, just let me use the simplistic term, who are anti-gun have. vast categories, a lack of understanding. It's shocking to me, very clearly, the discussion about guns in our society today is terribly emotional for completely understandable reasons. But it's emotional on both wings, on both sides of the spectrum, I suppose. So I was happy to come, and actually I viewed myself as a technical expert. There are honestly members there who would have never even touched a gun. At that very meeting, there people were saying, oh, I have never touched one and I never would. Now that stance is perfectly fine by me, but I actually, on a personal level, I think that's just incredibly naive. When individuals go into strange surroundings, and I'm thinking of simply the colonists coming over here, you know they had muskets and all that to be able to survive. They had to be able to survive. So the whole notion of being totally unwilling to touch a weapon, I find really very, very naive. And the other side is, well, on occasion when I've been surrounded by such people who say, I would never touch a weapon, I've actually said to them, I can understand in your own personal circumstances you wouldn't pick it up. But if somebody were coming through the door to your children, possibly attacking your children or your grandchildren, I don't believe that you will not do whatever it takes to protect your family. Yourself, I understand that. You, the individual, you, the adult. But your family, I cannot believe that. And I certainly wouldn't put up with anything, naturally. So, having viewed myself as the technical expert, I felt it was important for me to say, yes, I am a gun owner. And then I looked at the founder and said, and that's sort of why I'm here, to try to answer particular questions. And I would even bring one of my guns if that would be useful. And there was some, oh, that would be interesting. And there was some actual horror expressed about a gun coming into the house. Of course, I wouldn't bring it in without permission. That would be wrong, because your home is your castle too. And it occurred to me, based on actually wonderful conversation I had with Anne, that just as I am concerned about my gun rights, Anne is concerned about her privacy and her safety. And if I have the right to my gun, and she has the right not to be around a gun. And I think that's a very important point that I will admit I had not thought about, but she's completely reasonable. Not sure if I actually answered your question, but I felt I had to. I felt I had to acknowledge that I was a gun owner. And then at the end of the meeting, one or two other people, after the meeting had broken up and a few of us were chatting, mm-hmm. they admitted they had guns too, to the shock of the founder, because they had never acknowledged to him that they also were gun owners. And one guy said, oh, in fact, my brother has a gun and wants to give me another one. So,
And what I love about that story, and I want your perspective, both of you, is that it speaks to me, my analysis of it is a group think, a fear of, well, in this, I can't bring my full self. You know, the one or two people who were gun owners, I know that it's not the culture in this group. This is an anti-gun group, air quotes. So, you know, I've got to hide this part of myself. And it took you sort of laying that open for them to feel like they could respond. And I'm just wondering, you know, you guys are playing in this sandbox where there are these really stark divides, and you're doing this incredible work of trying to tear some of those divisions down. How does group think, or how, what would you attribute that to? That those are my words, but how would you talk about that dynamic? And do you see that?
Oh, absolutely. I think Peter and I both live in it, in the different places that we are in our worlds. Our society is not particularly good at thoughtfully discussing areas of disagreement at the moment, and gun violence and the presence of guns in our society is perhaps among the two or three most hyperbolic topics. So typically people come with a paradigm of you're one or the other, and in fact most people are somewhere in the middle. It's a continuum. So our work is to help people learn so that they can decide for themselves where they are on that continuum.
from my perspective, really throughout my whole life, I've always tried to, I hate to say shed light because it sounds arrogant, but at least to bring another viewpoint to whatever I'm hearing, be it guns or politics or a foreign country. Actually, I had somebody a few days ago say, you know, people over there, a lot of them, they're all bad. And I looked at him and I said, I've lived in places like that. And they're not all bad. They're exactly like you and I. We have the same concerns. A man wants to take care of his family. The woman wants to take care of her family. You want your children to be safe. You want your children to be educated. You want your children and your grandchildren to have opportunity. We are a whole lot more alike than we have differences. So when I feel the situation warrants, or I feel like, admittedly, I know that individual well enough, I'm happy to go up and, as we used to say in the military, brace them a little bit and say, no, that's wrong. Let me tell you why. Now, they may not like it or they may not say anything, but I have to admit it, depending on the circumstances, I always get my hearing, and it's important to, it's important when you do disagree that the other party understand that and understand why too. Admittedly, often that chance does not occur, but opportunities like this to share views, Anne and her group, they're very good to be reaching out. They're very courageous to be reaching out and building bridges. And I see that from that side, from the gun side, you don't see that, I'm sorry to say. I think the language there tends to be too flamboyant. The leading front organization for radical gun owners, to be unnamed by me at this instant, their leadership seems to be appallingly extreme, and their materials use such flamboyant language that if I didn't know better, even I would become nervous and fearful. But fortunately, I'm an adult, or you kindly use the term an elder, and I tend to know about some of these issues as well as that entity, that front organization goes. So it's easy for me to identify what is just outrageous, un-American propaganda and fear-mongering in the worst form. It is disgraceful. It really is.
I am going to take a moment to tease Peter a little, because when he described the two groups, you probably didn't realize that you described the gun-owning group as enthusiasts and the people who would prefer not to be around guns as rabid anti-gun people. I thought that was very interesting. We often don't realize how our innate preferences get expressed, even when we're trying so hard to come together. It is, frankly, exhausting work. It takes a lot of discipline and patience to do it well, and I always appreciate someone who's willing to partner with us to have those conversations.
Play that the tape again from maybe 20 minutes ago. I think I was equally brutal about the extremists, the rabid wings on both ends. I hope so. Or I should have been, and I will happily stand corrected.
And I'm really glad you brought up the part about the exhaustion, because I think that's the reality, right? Let's say that. This is exhausting. One, I mean, I think we're not trained for it, this dialoguing. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you, well, maybe, Peter, you're the exception in that you had a career diplomat. So you might be one of the few 1% of us that actually have training in this. And when I say this, I'm really talking about those skills. I think you guys have, either or both of you, used the language of building up our muscles collectively as a society, mm-hmm. and as individuals, mm-hmm. to have this deep dialogue instead of this shouting debate. So I guess my question here is more around, what have you learned in playing? And maybe, Anne, I'll start with you, because you know, you've come to this, you know, maybe without some of that already in your background, and you're mm-hmm. really learning and growing and getting mm-hmm. exhausted. Mm-hmm. What do we need to, which I imagine is what mm-hmm. I would feel too. Like, what can you tell us about what are the values and the, what's exhausting? Like, what are you stretching that is?
Well, I come to the work with a lot of respect for every human being that I'm interacting with. I think that's really fundamental to our making a commitment to deeply listen, which is also very necessary. The deep listening takes a lot of patience. Our society is not built for deep listening right now. The other thing that our society is built to do is have a win-lose mentality. You cannot bring a win-lose mentality. Well, you can, but in my experience, it doesn't move us forward. It needs to be a process of finding how we can live together. Lately, I've been saying that sentence a lot, finding a balance we can all live with. It takes a lot of self-discipline, and it's incremental. I speak a lot about building up relationships over time, and I am very careful not to try to accomplish too much in any one conversation. I spend a lot of time building up relationships, and what I've learned is it's important to not try to go too far too fast, because the work is difficult. And if you press for a solution or a win from your perspective, everything you've gained that thus far can fall apart. One of the things I've learned through this process is that whatever the reason is that many gun owners are gun owners, so let's take hunting or sports shooting in some form, is a very strong part of their personal identity. And therefore, that is the lens through which any suggestions about change in regulation filters. And so it may seem to some of us like is asking for a background check before you buy a rifle a big request. But when you've been, you and your family for generations have been very safety conscious, law abiding gun owners, you experience that almost as an insult. And that was an eye opening realization for me.
And I wanted to ask you, you know, I think your story personally, and we didn't get into this too much at the beginning, I wanted to dig in a little deeper. Of a woman and a leader and a community member and a mother who really was fed up, had enough, and took action. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little more around that process for you? What was that like for you? Help us paint a picture, get us into that moment of, you know, what did you have to wrestle with, and how did you take your first step?
Well, as I say, I had my own enough moment from reading one more article in the newspaper than I could endure. And it might sound a little over the top, but honestly, one of the first things I did was speak to my husband and my kids and say, I am thinking of getting very actively involved in gun violence prevention, and there is a possibility that there will be moments that could lead to unpleasant outcomes. Are you okay with my doing that? Now, thankfully, thus far, that has not been the case. I'm delighted to say that I've not encountered that, but I am aware that it's always a possibility. Beyond that, I felt called to the work because my professional background, I have a lot of marketing and communications background, and so I just felt that I was given gifts that could help create better communities for all of us. And I'm very intentional in saying for all of us, I would like us to be able to move in a powerful and healthy way beyond fighting over this issue.
Where are you seeing hope, if you are seeing hope? Mm-hmm. Are there anything that has surprised you in doing this work that you wouldn't have expected?
I definitely see hope. Peter was talking earlier about people at the extremes, and we had a presentation in southwestern Chester County where a large group of gun owners came to what I call kick the tires on our group and see if we really were a centrist group. And we actually happened to have a gun owner doing our presentation that night. And I think the people were a little surprised that we really seemed to be walking the talk of how we position ourselves. Several of those individuals then came to our next four meetings and spoke very vocally at any time during the presentation to express viewpoints. And that was frankly hard and stressful for the group listening and for the presenters. But over the course of time, we have developed a relationship with these individuals, and we are now at the point where we can exchange views, and we've identified some areas that we agree on. And in fact, I just mentioned to one of them that we've planned our upcoming meeting specifically around a topic that I know is of interest to him. From listening, we each learned what the perspectives were and listened for things that you could say, well, I agree with you on that. One of the themes, for example, is the question is often asked, why isn't there more prosecution of existing gun laws before we add more? And I was able to readily say, I think that's an excellent question, and in fact, we're going to be exploring that at an upcoming meeting. Mm-hmm. So that listening led to some common ground, and once you found it, you can more readily build from there. Gun Sense Chester County is, it's important that we are not an anti-gun group, because if we see this as a societal issue, and we believe that every resident of the United States has rights that need to be considered. We certainly understand there are many people who've owned guns and enjoyed guns for a long time and will continue to without any problems. And we need them, and it's appropriate for them to come to the table and help us find solutions that work for all of us. If you start out by saying, we don't like guns, where do you go from there? It's hard to identify common ground if you invalidate something that is very important to them.
Peter, in the years you've spent engaging in dialogue, what's important for people to understand?
My whole life, I've always felt that it's important for people to communicate, particularly when you disagree, or you might disagree and you don't know if you disagree, so you better find out if you do disagree. So at least on a very personal level, I've always personally, individually, been very willing to open myself up to find out where some individual is positioned on some issue. But what that implies is I open myself up first. You have to establish some trust and some credibility. Fortunately, with guns, for a variety of reasons, I have some credibility and I have some knowledge. And now that I'm more on the mature side, if I can use that more gentle term, it's easier to lean in, particularly on young men. Men seem to have larger issues pertaining to guns. And so it's easier, may I say, for an old man to talk to a young man about the realities of a gun and the responsibilities thereof, and simply try to be helpful within some sort of community context. What I do here at my gun club is sometimes the importance of the Second Amendment. Oh, it's Second Amendment, and depending on my degree of annoyance and frustration, I will say, do you know how many amendments there are? And there can be a long pause for that one. And then I say, well, you're a veteran, you've served overseas somewhere, you don't get to pick which amendment you like. And I have said that to people. And I have to say, I haven't gotten any response back, but at least I haven't gotten knocked down either. But it's important to disagree with people when they are holding some, I might say, naive, or maybe simply some slightly thoughtless, well-intended, but still thoughtless position.
And how about you?
There are two points I'd like to make. First, I would say to any gun owner who would listen, we need your help. I think most of us agree that the United States of America has a problem with gun violence that we need to address. And many of us do not want to take away a tool that you, or a hobby that you enjoy. But we need you to come to the table with some proposals of your own and let's discuss it. Unfortunately, it often feels that the answer from the largest organization involved with this is no to every proposal. And that, I will say personally, feels very disrespectful to the 60% of US households that do not own guns. and disrespectful to many of that organization's own members who are in favor of common sense regulation. The second thing I'll share that I find interesting, and Peter, I'm nudging him a little, gun owners often tell me about being in their space of target practice or enjoying their sport or being hunting, and I've heard many of these stories now, about the lunatic who does not know how to use usually his weapon safely or appropriately and how they addressed it in that setting. And I can't help but think, but yes, you sent them out to the rest of our world. So help us resolve that issue of the lack of education and safety awareness at a deeper level. It's great and necessary to do it while you're hunting or sports shooting, but it's equally necessary to do it so that when that person has their weapon in a broader society, that we can all feel safer.
Thanks for listening to our conversation with Ann Colby Cummins and Peter Alois. To find out more about nonpartisan, nonprofit, common sense gun reform like Gun Sense Chester County, check out our website for links at 3MinuteStoryteller.com. We're so glad you're along for the ride.